You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
In September 2011, thousands of people marched on the Financial District in New York. They then formed an encampment in Zuccotti Park and launched a movement that changed the perspective on economic inequality. Occupy Wall Street has been described as both a surprising success and a clear failure. 2 years on, what is the legacy of Occupy Wall Street? Priscilla Grimm was one of the key organizers of the Occupy movement, and she's also worked with the movement's most popular website, OccupyWallStreet.org. And she's joining me by phone this morning from New York to talk about that legacy. Hello, Priscilla.
Hello. How are you?
Pretty good, thanks. Why do you think Occupy Wall Street initially took off?
I think it initially took off because we had no choice. It had to initially take off. We had so many people out of work. The economy was tanked. I mean, half the people who wound up in Zuccotti Park were just out-of-work people looking for a solution. A lot of them had believed in the promise of then-candidate, Barack Obama's plan to bring, like, real transformative change to the country, and finally came to the realization, it's not coming. So we have to think of something different. A new approach needs to be taken.
How did you get involved in Occupy?
It's really interesting because I've worked in independent media and in the NGO world for over 10 years, and I had just gotten my first corporate job with Time Warner Social Media, and they, due to restructuring, I was laid off. That happened on September 6th or September 7th, and it was really like bubbling around online that this action was going to take off, and this was something that was being planned in New York, and I had looked at it a little bit but hadn't really taken it seriously. But as I was, talking to my boss who was giving me, this talk, sorry, you're out of work again, she said, have you heard anything about this Occupy Wall Street thing online? And I was like, well, yeah, I've seen stuff. She's like, well, you're going to have some time, so check it out.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
So now Occupy and the idea of the 1% is just become so, everybody knows those terms, everybody knows that idea. But when it first started, was the idea of the 1% there?
Well, this is the thing that a lot of people don't take into account. This language has been used by the 1% for more than a couple of years. I think Jamie Johnson put out a documentary in 2010 or 2009 called The 1%. Joseph Stiglitz, a really great economist, he wrote an article in Vanity Fair, I think in May 2011, that said, of the 1%, by the 1%, for the 1%. And in that article, he's basically saying, this is an unsustainable system. We cannot do this. But whenever this was talked about, it was really talked about the crushing behavior of the 1% versus how this was manifesting into the lives of the 99%. So these weren't like new things that just kind of came out of thin air. It's just Christopher Key, the creator of the Tumblr blog, We Are the 99%, just switched it around. And once we switched it around towards, the audience who, our potential audience who were are hoping for some kind of message like this, it just took off like wildfire because, there's a lot more of us than there are of them.
Right. Quite a lot more. So instead of kind of looking at the activities of the 1%, it was more like, hey, we're all the 99%. That was the
right.
Big switch. What was the community like there in Zuccotti Park?
I mean, it was interesting because I was in a very, I'm in a very privileged position as to having been there from the first day of the encampment until the end of it. I mean, I slept there a handful of times. I have a young daughter, so it's just harder. But she and I had dinner there many, many nights because I was unemployed and didn't have a whole lot of money living in New York City, and I thought, hey, I'm going to help organize on this. So at the beginning, it was really interesting. The first night, we were actually surrounded by riot cops in full gear. So on one hand, it was incredibly terrifying because I'm not the kind of woman who's used to such circumstances. I marched and was an activist when I was younger, but, you know, I'm mother of a now 10-year-old. I work very hard. I was in school. Like, that's not my gig. You know, I'm not into being surrounded by cops. But at the same time, it was the first time I'd been at a protest in which the activists had more cameras on the cops than the cops had cameras on the activists. So I knew immediately that this was going to work because anything that they did in the age of YouTube and everything is just anything that they did incorrectly and inhumanely, it was going to be captured and shown to the world.
How was the encampment broken up? I know there was the forcible breakup of the encampment, but were there things that were happening before that to prepare for that?
Well, I mean, the encampment just kind of organically happened. It wasn't something that was planned. You know, like the first night there, none of the organizers knew if anybody was actually going to sleep there because everybody was afraid to say it on the email list if they were actually going to sleep there. And nobody really knew. You know, myself, I was there without a sleeping bag. I actually sat up all night and drank coffee with a good friend of mine because I wanted to be able to run. I couldn't, I have a kid. So it was very basic. It was just everybody with like little sleeping bags and it's fine. And then it progressed to people sleeping on cardboard, which as an activist and a humanitarian, that was really interesting to me because, you know, in New York City and several urban centers, people who are homeless sleep on cardboard because it's the only relief that they can get from the ground. And if we're not representing for them and if we're not fighting for a world in which they can live and not have to sleep on cardboard, that's what we should be there for, you know. And once it moved past there and started getting the tents and everything, it just got, like, ridiculous. And it was a good place to be until, like, close to the end of it where it was just unmanageable and it became a not safe situation, honestly. But the way that it was broken up with a coordinated conference call between the mayors of several U.S. cities that had these encampments in there, that is completely against every right that the United States is supposedly founded on. And that is a crime, and it should be seen like that. That was our government coordinating against political dissent. And you can't prepare for that. They have the military-industrial complex behind them. I mean, and this is the struggle, and these are the questions that we're asking of ourselves in the movement, which is why we're starting to talk about developing a nonviolent militia.
What do you think the legacy of Occupy Wall Street is now?
Well, I mean, I think it would be unfair to have asked in the 60s after 6 months of organizing with the civil rights movement or even 2 years, you know, what have you done really to make things better for people in this country? I don't think the real story is going to be written for another 10 years. I think we have a lot of work ahead of us, and I think that, you know, the way journalism works, they need a beginning, a middle, and an end. You know, we had sources from the New York Times telling us that they were sitting in editorial meetings, and the journalists were just, like, rolling their eyes. Oh, we have to do another Occupy Wall Street story. It's like, yeah, you have to do another Occupy Wall Street story. Like, there are people dying in this country from starvation. There are people who have to pay in cash to get their kids immunizations. You know, people are losing their houses, which is the ultimate in state violence, to put a family out on the street. Yeah, you have to cover these issues, and they are still. I mean, right now, in the media in the United States, it is really at the highest point of critique on capitalism that I have ever seen in my lifetime in this country at this level. And we have, you know, at our fingertips right now, the most powerful, you know, media conglomerations out there, and they couldn't deny covering these stories. I mean, Russell Brand got 1 million views on YouTube in a day because he called for revolution. People are ready. The story's not over, and yeah.
So when you look for signs of the ideas that Occupy brought forward still being active, I guess, where do you see those signs?
Physically active tomorrow in on the steps of City Hall in New York City. There's going to be a huge action for the Hurricane Sandy survivors, which is a huge deal here. Occupy Wall Street, a lot of the organizers created an offshoot called Occupy Sandy, in which they outperformed the Federal Emergency Management Administration, FEMA, in the United States after the hurricane on the East Coast last year. They're still active in the communities, and they're building worker-owned co-ops in areas in which businesses have been destroyed. We've thrown some serious weight behind the Walmart and fast food strikes this year. There's also a huge contingent of Occupy down in Washington, D.C. today, protesting the international wiretap that it seems the NSA is entitled to under this administration. I see a lot of, you know, a million YouTube views on Russell Brand saying revolution in a day. I mean, and the other thing is that, you know, we were a huge faction in bringing in people to the Trayvon Martin marches here in New York City, which resonated throughout the United States. I mean, the United States is hopping politically right now like it hasn't in years. And it's a coordinated effort amongst a lot of different groups and interests. And Occupy is thankfully in that soup of giving support and bringing things to light and talking to communities online, talking to people on the ground, helping change the paradigm. Like, you know, with the Walmart workers, one of the big ideas behind it was, oh, well, we'll get everyone unionized. Well, one of the things that Occupy has been pushing through that as well in our involvement is that unions are just a part of that. What if you take the 40% of Walmart that is owned by the Walton family, who none of them work for Walmart? All they really do is live off that profit and give away a tiny piece of it. And instead of that money going to that overindulgent family, that money goes back to the workers so that they can buy a majority stake in the company, and that wealth goes back to the workers, and it would instantly transform the world economy, as Walmart is a world company that happens to be based in the United States.
Well, thank you very much for talking to me this morning, Priscilla. It's been really interesting.
I hope that the word is that Occupy is not that Occupy is dead, because it is very much alive. And everybody should come to OccupyWallaceT.org.
Okay, great. Oh, great. I'll let people know about that URL again. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. I've been speaking with Priscilla Grimm. She was one of the key organizers of the Occupy movement. And that URL again, where you can find out more about the continuing work of the Occupy movement, is OccupyWallStreet.org.